This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Just a little over a year ago, me and the guest I'm bringing on today's Gains podcast made a bold prediction that Bitcoin will be $1 million per token in the not too distant future. That was close to the bottom, and Bitcoin was around $17,000 a token then. Bitcoin is now over $40,000 a token. Safe to say our $1 million Bitcoin forecast is still very much intact. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, let's bring back Billy Oliveri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. Also, check out his website, Senecal Capital, and that's CenacleCapital.com. Bill, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Andy, it's great to be back. Love talking about crypto and Bitcoin and all the topics you and I touch base on.
Yes, and just a little over a year ago, on December 7th, 2022, we did, on the Gains podcast, the episode $1 million Bitcoin Forecast. Bill was the guest, and I'll just read the description from that. I said, Bill Oliveri, who's joining us right here on the line, joined us to discuss the coming end of the so-called crypto winter, and we made the case for Bitcoin to rise over $1 million per token in the near future. Now, when we said near future, a couple years out. So at the time of that podcast, just over a year ago, Bitcoin was around $17,000 per token. And before I came in the studio to do today's Gains podcast with Bill, I looked up Bitcoin, and it's over $41,000 per token. You do the math. That call that we made, Bitcoin's up about 140%. And I just want you to start there, Bill, with what we've seen over the past year when we made that first initial forecast.
That was a tough call. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I remember feeling incredibly foolish for saying that and even continuing that conversation because we had so much anti-regulatory content coming out of the SEC. In other regulatory bodies were attacking Bitcoin and blockchain technology, you know, both here and abroad. We had the Sam Bankman-Fried issues with the FTX exchange collapsing. We had so many bad things coming out in the world of Bitcoin and blockchain technology. Yeah, but Bitcoin has been an incredible performer, and it has acted as it was predicted, being this non-correlated asset. Although, let's be truthful. And that is during the decline in 2022, Bitcoin also took a hit. But we have Bitcoin up 144%. Ethereum is up 80% in the same time frame. Solana still up 420%. Everything is beating the pants off of gold, silver, and the S&P 500. So we're really happy. Our clients are happy. We've got some attractive gains for even having a minuscule part of our portfolios allocated to the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, which is up 300% since our call on December 7th, 2022.
You know, one of the things that really strikes me about that time was you and I are both contrarians. So when everybody on Wall Street, or it seems like everybody on Wall Street's zigging, we're zagging. We're always playing the other side often because we, you know, you and I'm sure you'll agree with me, going against the crowd or the common way of thinking, especially in investing, can really put you at an advantage. And I remember when we were talking at the time, it just seemed like the bottom for the market because it was just the ultimate pile on. And you cited some of those things at the time. Thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's not, you can't be a contrarian just for the sake of being a contrarian. But when you see newspaper articles, the front page, magazines, the news media is just lit up with negative news. It usually comes at the end of a cycle. I mean, there's a huge study that was done out there, and I don't remember who actually did it, but it was kind of like a Forbes magazine contrarian hedge fund idea, where once a topic made it on the front of Forbes magazine or even on the front of The Economist magazine, it had already run its course, right? Once it hits mainstream, it's already 90% the way it's going to go. And so I think in this particular case, the mainstream media was just so anti-crypto. But, you know, when you compare that with what was going on with the price action, it just seemed to be, once again, this paradox, this contradiction in the news that was being made versus how price action was looking. And I just thought that was really interesting. And it looked like maybe, once again, it was like a head fake, you know, the magician trick where, you know, what you see is not really what's going on. It's kind of going behind, you know, the real event is happening behind the hands, right? You got to watch the assistant. And I remember it was a tough call, but certainly we hit it, I mean, almost perfectly with the timing of that podcast.
That was the bottom pretty much. And what you were referring to is, we've talked about it on the Noon Business Hour. It used to be called the magazine cover indicator. And then by the time a market success or failure reaches the cover of a major publication, that market has already been overbought or oversold. And that's exactly what happened. And we were even talking about that at the time. So that's kind of how we came up with the call. And we knew, and this is also the premise that we both believe in, especially Bitcoin, but crypto long term, the utility and everything about it, that we knew it wasn't the end. And when we saw the pile on, we kind of called the bottom there.
No, I mean, we've watched this movie before, Andy. We remember it in, you know, the first Gulf War, second Gulf War. I mean, the market took a huge hit in July. And then when we began invading, you know, like the following year, the market had the biggest one-day rally, I think, on record, right, when we were going to invade Iraq. And it's just, once again, it's like you have to buy the rumor and sell the news. And in a way, Bitcoin was kind of like that. Like, we just saw this incredible decline throughout all of 2022. And then all of a sudden, people are saying it's dead. Like, it just, once again, seemed like a contradiction that was a good play.
And you know, you talking about seeing this before, you and I have been talking about crypto, I think, since we almost met. I mean, like, literally going back to 2010, 2011, 2012, you know, that first initial wave, you know, we were both aware of crypto. So you talked about, we've seen this before. And I remember back in 2010. I mean, this is a while back. I mean, back in 2010, when Bitcoin started gaining just a little bit of attraction, and it was kind of noteworthy that, you know, this new cryptocurrency idea, and it went from basically zero to like 1,000 over, you know, 2011, 2012. And then we saw it crash. Okay. And those prices slump right back down to like the prices we saw near 2010. That was like in 2013, it crashed. I mean, it was like 1,200 and it crashed back down to, I think, even maybe below or around 25, 50 a token. And then It sat there, and it slowly rose. And then it rose again all the way up to like 18,000, almost 20 grand in like 2018. That's when it started getting, you know, more people knew about it. You started seeing tickers for Bitcoin on CNBC, and then it crashed, and it went down to like 10,000 and maybe even lower. It even dropped lower than that at one point, and everybody turned away. And then, you know, in 19 and 20, around the pandemic, we saw it make its big move to, you know, the 60,000 mark. And then we sold the sell-off. And the one thing that strikes me, so we've been watching this, what, 12 years plus? You see these waves where people start finding out about it and they invest and then it starts pushing and then there's FOMO. You know, fear of missing out. And then
I love that term.
Yeah, FOMO. And then it crashes and everybody except a lot of people who believe in this stuff long term sell out, turn away, and it lays flat. And then, you know, but there is each time there's more adoption, you know, and more people know about it. And we've seen these multiple waves now. And again, that when we did that December 7th call on Bitcoin, that was the bottom of that latest wave. And I do feel that, you know, we're still kind of in the early innings of this, but, you know, it's more and more people know about Bitcoin and crypto now than even 2-3 years ago. And more than...
Yeah, and more large companies have filed for a Bitcoin spot ETF. We see adoption all over the world. We see central banks lining up to do central bank digital currencies. And I'm reminded of that famous quote, I think it was Warren Buffett who said, bear markets are when stocks return to their rightful owners. Well, same can be said with cryptocurrency. These bear markets are vicious. Vicious. All you have to do is go back a year and a half, Andy, and see that the declines in Facebook, Amazon, Google, Tesla, NVIDIA, Peloton, Zoom, like every technology stock, got absolutely crushed, you know, in 2022. Long-term bonds down 35%, maybe some bond funds down 40%. So we have to, again, keep things in their perspective. And you and I have seen many bear markets in the S&P 500, Russell 2000. NASDAQ.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's a great point. You know, this isn't just
20%.
This is, you know, we're talking Bitcoin today, but you and I could have seen these kind of waves in so many markets over the last 30, 40 years. It's not even funny. We could talk precious metals. We could talk tech boom. The story kind of plays out. And I like that quote that you had just thrown out there because that does really ring true. So, and that's the thing is when you have when you've been in markets and you've seen this stuff, It does follow a pattern, and a lot of times history repeats itself. Now, sometimes companies go out of business or asset classes get crushed, but you know, if you believe in crypto and Bitcoin long term, like we do, it's easy to kind of play, you know, these markets. And and again, our forecast, I mean, we haven't even recaptured the highs, but we are up 140%+ a year later. And now Bill and I are going to talk about why we think this is going to continue. And there's a lot of factors out there. And Bill, let's start with that. So, you know, the public had turned away, probably insiders, other people like us. I've said for the last year and a half, my play on Bitcoin, Ethereum, my play on crypto is dollar cost average into Bitcoin and Ethereum. I do a couple other, I have Doge, you know, I'm a Doge guy. Mm-hmm. I have some other altcoins that I'll deploy and dollar cost in, but that's been the play, you know, with the focus really on Bitcoin, the granddaddy of crypto, and then Ethereum just because of its utility with NFT and used as a fuel. But, you know, the case can be made that this $1 million forecast that we talked about is kind of where, you know, that path is visible. you know, in the not too, too distant future. So let's talk about what is kind of, you know, spurring the recent interest and why this thing has some room and legs still to go. And that, you know, go ahead and kind of give us your thoughts on that, Bill.
Well, gosh, Andy, there's, you know, there's so much to talk about. And again, this is just, you know, Bitcoin is still very new and we haven't figured it out completely. Okay. Let's just, we have to be as realistic and honest and as transparent as possible. So, you know, Bitcoin is a fixed digital asset. There's only 21 million tokens are ever going to exist in the Bitcoin economy, right? The Bitcoin world. And of the 21 million possible tokens of all time, about 19.5 million are already spoken for. That means we're going into this next halving time period, and I know we're going to talk about that. We're going into a time period where there's only 1.4, 1.5 million Bitcoin that will ever be ever left there. And this is really important because the use case for Bitcoin is that it is a rare digital asset that when you send it to somebody, when I send you Bitcoin, you receive value and it comes out of my account into yours. There's no counterfeiting. There's no double spend problem is what the bankers and the monetary supply people want to talk about. So Bitcoin, by its very inception, was designed to be like a deflationary currency where the number of issuance in time decreases. But as you know, the US dollar has the opposite value proposition. The Federal Reserve and U.S. Treasury, they can print as much as they want. Congress can spend as much as it wants. And the U.S. dollar has lost 94, 96% of its purchasing power in the last, I don't know, since the 1970s, since we came off the gold standard. And so you have a world now where we have, you know, $30 trillion of debt. You have the big players like ProShares, Invesco, BlackRock, Fidelity, I can't remember the name of the ETF company, but they're all pitching
that
this
Van
idea
Ark?
Of
Van Ark, I think.
Van Ark, right? Van Ark. They're petitioning and submitting applications in order to have Bitcoin ETFs, exchange traded funds. The Chicago Mercantile has created the Bitcoin reference rate. You know, number like 5 or 6 years ago, Chicago Board Options Exchange, the futures exchange, was trading Bitcoin futures for a while. I mean, you have so much going on here. I just talked to a guy the other day that he buys Bitcoin through PayPal, right? So the whole globe is realizing that this is really an incredible infrastructure on the internet. And so you have demand, interesting technology, all the big players, all the elephants in a room are going for this. And you're coming up to this new halving cycle where the annual supply of Bitcoin is getting cut in half. And I can talk about that comparing it to commodities.
And we'll talk about that halving process. The one thing I wanted to throw in there, and you mentioned this early on, it's still early. Now for people like us, and I'm sure a lot of the Gains listeners who've mm-hmm. known about this for a while, it seems like we're so like, oh, it's been around forever. But if you really look at, you know, the people who actually own Bitcoin, it is such a tiny amount of people compared to investors that have their money in other asset classes. And then you talked about this fixed amount. I mean, wouldn't it be nice if there was a fixed amount on gold? You can always, you know, even now you can still mine more gold, mine more silver, even though it, you know, it's tough. And it does have a value. And we see what inflation does to the buying power of the dollar.
Sure.
But having this fixed amount, we know how much will ever exist is huge. And now that's where there's another layer to this. And I want you to talk about, you know, get into the halving thing that's coming up, Bill.
Right. Well, when I talk about the Bitcoin halving, I compare it to the game of Monopoly, where every time you pass go, you take $200 from the bank. You take $200 out of free parking, in essence, right? And that's your reward for going around the boardwalk, around the real estate board. It's a reward. for making one complete cycle around the board. Bitcoin, again, was this idea that there's a financial incentive in order to expend the resources needed to secure the Bitcoin network. And so how it works is that you buy a computer. Well, back in the very beginning, you used a laptop, and then from laptops, you were using graphical GPU cards, graphical processing units. So like you could have five or six GPU cards connecting to a motherboard, and you'd connect to the Bitcoin network, and you'd be using those types of multi-parallel processing units to mine Bitcoin. And then from there, the Bitcoin machines, the ASIC machines, became really popular. Anyhow, so there's a few costs involved. There's electricity. There's the cost of buying the hardware for the Bitcoin mining machine. And there's the cost of an internet connection. So the cost of the interconnection is next to nothing. The electricity is pretty expensive because of the power that's required to run all the algorithms. And then you have the actual hardware machine, the computer, called an ASIC. And so what happens is, Andy, there has to be a reward to the people who are spending money to secure the network. And that reward is Bitcoin, right? I receive a reward, $25 an hour, $30 an hour, $250 an hour. That's my reward for expending a certain amount of work. Whether I'm a ditch digger, a lineman, a policeman, a nurse, or investment advisor, right? I get paid by the hour. I get paid by the contracting work. That work is compensation for energy or expertise that's deployed. Bitcoin is no different. It's a financial system. It's a value. It's a global currency. It's digital cash. It's all these things. But there has to be a reward, a financial incentive, almost very libertarian in a way. Where as a miner, that's the person who helps run and secure the network, you receive a fee. And that fee in the very beginning was 50 Bitcoin. And four years later, when you solve a mathematical problem every 10 minutes, Bitcoin has this heartbeat. Roughly every 10 minutes, a block is solved and completed. And this block contains all the transactions that happened in the previous 10 minutes. It's a spreadsheet that has in chronological order every single transaction that ever happened on the Bitcoin network is compressed in these little 10-minute blocks, these 10-minute files. Bloop, 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 bloop. Okay, every 10 minutes contains data. That data needs to be secured, and that's done by miners. These miners receive a reward. And in the beginning, it was 50 Bitcoin. Then it went down to 25, and then 12 and a half, and then 6 1/4. And that's where we're at right now. 6 1/4 Bitcoin is that monopoly money that's released to the environment, to the economy of Bitcoin every 10 minutes. And that 6 1/4 Bitcoin is a reward for the people who expend the computer and electrical expenses for Bitcoin. And so that's an important thing, because in another 130 days, in April of 2024, the reward's going to go from 6 1/4 to 3 1/8. 3.125 Bitcoin every 10 minutes. So again, as a trader, as a financial advisor, if you're a farmer, if you're a gold bug, you have to realize that there's something that everybody talks about, and that's the supply-demand curve, this relationship between supply and demand. We talked about it when you're trading corn, wheat, soybeans, cattle, everything, right? And when demand rises, the manufacturers meet that demand by creating more supply. There's more lumber, more natural gas, more oil, more pigs, more corn, more soybeans, more wheat whenever demand gets strong. But you can't say that for Bitcoin. Bitcoin has a fixed, limited supply. So all there really is demand. And yes, we see big swings in the price of Bitcoin due to demand. But we can talk about that today or in another episode. But we have eliminated 50% of the uncertainty of the price of Bitcoin, because by its very mathematical design of code, we know what the supply is going to be, and that's what makes it attractive. In this world of unregulated nonstop printing of money and debt that we don't even know how much exists.
All right, we got to take a quick break, but when we get back, we'll talk about further adoption and what the future holds for Bitcoin. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings. We'll be right back after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
All right, back with Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. Check out the website, senecalcapital.com. That's senacalecapital.com. One thing before we get back into the conversation, Bill, you wrote a very important book. So the Gains listeners got to check this out. It's a book about recovering cryptocurrency, what to do if somebody's got cryptocurrency and they die. Talk about that book real quick before we get back into the convo, Bill.
Oh, I really appreciate that opportunity. Yeah, it's I self-published it on Amazon. You can do an Amazon book search, cryptocurrency plus estate planning. And the title of the book is The Essential Estate Professional's Toolkit for Recovering Cryptocurrency. And it was inspired by two things. One is I was at Harper College here in the suburbs giving a presentation to a group of financial planners. And when I was sitting in the back of the room before I was introduced, the gentleman who was hosting the event had asked for a show of hands. How many clients have reached out to you, financial planners, about cryptocurrency? And about 80% of the people raised their hand. And then the next question was, how many of you financial planners know anything about cryptocurrency? And nobody raised their hand. And I'm like, okay, interesting. This could be something. And then lastly, what really, you know, put the nail in the coffin for me to write this book was a conversation I had with a gentleman who was an attendee of a meetup group that I actually had hosted in Glenview called the North Shore Bitcoin and Blockchain Group. And he was in his 70s. He was retired, really friendly guy, super quiet. And when he retired, he bought a fair amount of Ethereum. And the Ethereum at the time that we met for had risen, you know, parabolically. And, you know, his kids didn't really give him much credit for buying Ethereum. As a matter of fact, you know, it's just funny internet money, you know, call it whatever you will. They thought it was kind of silly, but he was a good dad. So they gave him some bandwidth there, but his wife wanted to support the arts and music here in the Chicago area. And he bought Ethereum because he was a technology geek. Well, that Ethereum was worth eight figures by the time we met for coffee, mid eight figures. I mean, it went from $100,000 to, you know, $50 million worth of Ethereum.
Wow.
And he began creating foundations, and he had an estate planning attorney. He's got lawyers. I mean, he did the right thing, right? He's protected legally. But anyhow, it made me realize that here's a guy, you know, it's got a couple of 2-3 kids, his wife, they don't care about his Bitcoin. They don't care about his Ethereum. It's just magic internet money. And if he dies, where is that going to go? How do you get that back? Because there's no service desk. There's no building. There's no 1-800 number you can call to get your Ethereum back or your Bitcoin back. So I just wanted to write my thoughts about the best way to recover cryptocurrency and things you should have in place before you die. Because once you're gone, you're probably not going to, you're not going to be able to get your cryptocurrency back unless you perform some really important record keeping, inventory control, and have your trusted advisors and contacts in place. So,
and one thing I want to throw in there real quick, what Bill is talking about too is people who are taking actual possession of the cryptocurrency in a wallet. So it is a little different. You know, a lot of people going forward are going to just buy it through a like Robinhood on their Robinhood account. They never actually take position of the actual currency. Robinhood does all of that. These ETFs, you know, you're not going to be taking, or most people wouldn't be taking position, you know, actual position and putting Bitcoin into their virtual wallet. So that's what he's talking about. Right. So, and this has really impacted people early on, because back in the day, that's how you traded it. It was like wallets back and forth. There were some small exchanges. That is changing as well. But for a lot of early adopters of crypto, this is a must read. Go ahead, Bill.
No, thank you so much for that, Andy. Yeah, it's true. I mean, there are people that, you know, it's like if you're a gold bug, you can own gold ownership through the shares of companies. You can own gold via the GLD is the symbol, or silver, SLV. And the same is with Bitcoin. You can own your Bitcoin through PayPal. You can have it on Robinhood. You can own it on an exchange like Coinbase or a platform. But the best, safest way to hold on to it is in an offline storage device. It looks like a USB stick. And the same can be said for gold. There's some people say, well, if I have gold in my IRA that's in GLD, I don't really own the gold. The only gold I have is in my basement or in my gun safe or in my safety deposit box or whatever. And so, you know, you can hold Bitcoin, quote unquote, physically in a offline storage device, just like you can owning gold bullion or silver bullion or numismatics. So for those people that own it physically, it's tricky.
In fact, real quick, there's just to kind of explain this a little further, because I know a lot of people aren't really familiar with the wallets and that kind of thing. I mean, just real quick, explain, there's a seed phrase in a wallet when you actually take, you're not actually taking physical possession on a drive, but there's a seed phrase. And just explain that really quick. Sorry to interrupt you there.
No, you're fine. Well, the way I explain the seed phrase is that there is a, okay, so I look at the address of my home, or if you live in an apartment or your single family home, you have really two ways of getting in and out of the home. I can send you mail. I can send you something and it goes to your public address. You know, 123 ABC Lane. And I don't really care how many people have that information, right? Because it's just my public address and my mail comes here, my Amazon boxes and things I purchase on eBay. But if I want somebody inside my house, if I want to leave my house, if I want to open up the security of my house, then you have to have a key, right? I have a key to my front door or the key for my garage code. And that key is what gives me permission to enter and exit my home where my valuables are, right? And my wife and my kids. Bitcoin is kind of like the same thing, where when you are owning and you want to hold physical Bitcoin, you have to do it with a key. And the key is a long string of numbers. It's an encrypted key. It's a long string of, you know, of characters, numbers and letters. And that is what you permit the Bitcoin world to. It proves your ownership of the Bitcoin. Like, I have my public Bitcoin address and I can spray paint it on every billboard all over the world. But if I want to release and transfer my Bitcoin, I need my private key. And that private key is what I'm talking about in this conversation. So Bitcoin has two keys, the public key, which anybody can have, and I don't care, and my private key, which is the only key, like the key to my house, that I can release my Bitcoin. I can exchange it. I can sell it. And that is what's stored on this online device. And that's how you're able to keep track of your actual Bitcoin.
And when you hear the
private key.
And when you hear about people who have lost, you know, they got into Bitcoin very early on and then they, you know, have lost it, it's because they no longer have the seed phrase. And if you don't have the seed phrase, it doesn't matter how much Bitcoin you bought. And you're not going to be able to get into your wallet, and that's a problem.
Exactly. It's like cash, Andy. I mean, if you look at the Bitcoin white paper, it was meant to be digital cash. And if I had a brown paper bag that had $10,000 sitting on my hood of my car, or in my house, or anywhere in a briefcase, and I left it on the train, it fell off my car, it was in my house and it was burned or stolen, it's gone, right? That's it. I have to secure that this possession of an asset that I have. And the same rules kind of apply. See, the tough thing with Bitcoin is that we have these words like, you know, wallet and key and custody and like vault and all these words that we use to convey a concept, but it isn't perfect because, again, Bitcoin is really, really new. No, here's my email address. Well, what does it really mean? Is it email address? Is it my home address? Remember back in the 90s when you had an email address, people were like, wait, what? Why don't I just send you a letter using the postal service? That was a big, you know, topic for discussion between my mom and I. You know, my mom was in her 70s and I wanted her to get an email address at AOL. And she's like, well, what do you have to, what's that for? And I go, well, I can send you an email. It's faster than going to the post office. And my mom would say, well, what do you have to say that's so important that you just can't send me a letter? Like, I can't wait a few days.
Or just call me on the phone. Or even call me on the phone. Yeah.
But now look at our lives are surrounded by email and texting and messaging. Like, I text more than I talk on the phone. And so it's things have changed and evolved. And the Bitcoin world is really no different, is that we use these words that don't always mean the same thing, but we're just trying to convey an idea and an opinion. And if you self-custody your Bitcoin or your cryptocurrency, you don't have it on an exchange, a cryptocurrency exchange. You don't have it at PayPal or Robinhood. You know, good luck getting it back unless you've taken precautions. And that's what my book is about. And so it should be purchased not only for yourself, but for your loved ones who are going to rely on the data you left behind in order to recover your cryptocurrency for your inheritance and for your beneficiaries. And also, you know, for estate planning attorneys and financial planners who want to learn more about Bitcoin and what it means to possess it and have keys and things like that.
All right. So moving forward then, for an overwhelming amount of the people who are going to be, you know, investing in Bitcoin and crypto going forward, they're going to be using brokerage services. They're going to be buying it on platforms like Robinhood, where they really don't actually take custody and it's an investment. And That's the next thing. We were talking about these phases. Like early on, there wasn't a ton of places you could trade it. I mean, you really kind of had to be a little technologically savvy to kind of be in the Bitcoin game and know what exchanges you could go on and often how to get that Bitcoin on the exchange to sell. That's all going, you know, that was a couple waves ago. Now we're seeing adoption. We're going to be seeing an ETF. We're seeing the so-called big boys getting involved in this. And that is why I think the million-dollar Bitcoin forecast that we talked about, that's the real driver now. I mean, the early adopters, we've seen it, and there's been a ton of money that's been made and lost as people have been trading this. But now, when a lot of others who wouldn't even think about crypto as an investment just a couple years ago will start putting, hey, a percent here, a percent there.
Right.
And even if we can, you know, if you see 1% or 2% of the investing public start really adding it to their account, it's going to be a lot more than the people who are already in it. So, and let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah, well, Andy, you know, you and I had a little bit of a sidebar conversation a little while ago, and that is our $1 million target. We may have actually undercalled that.
Yes.
You know, we may have done our listeners a disservice by saying, I think we just might be too low on that target. And it's really interesting that you said that, because I have to compare Bitcoin with other asset classes and other ETFs and other future contracts in order for me to either accept or deny, you know, an idea. And so, you know, I was a floor trader at the Chicago Board Options Exchange for most of my career. I traded plenty of S&P 500 futures and options. And, you know, one of the most popular contracts at the Chicago Mercantile is their S&P 500 E-mini contract. And in order to find out what the notional value of an E-mini contract is, or the notional value of what's called the big contract, you take the price of the index, multiply it by 50 or You multiply it by 50, then multiply it by 4, and then multiply it by, you know, the price. And what I mean is that let's get the notional value of one S&P 500 contract. The S&P 500 contract for one big unit of a future, it's about $950,000, $936,400. So if I were to buy one S&P 500 futures contract, I'm really controlling roughly $936,000 worth of the S&P 500. And I think that's really important. Now, I'm not talking about margin. I'm talking about cash, okay? So people say, well, what if Bitcoin does go to $1 million? I'm like, so what? S&P 500, one big contract is roughly almost $1 million. So people have to understand that they can buy Bitcoin in teeny tiny parts. Just like you could buy teeny tiny parts of the S&P 500 or the Russell 2000 or the NASDAQ 100. When you buy a Vanguard mutual fund, when you get a Fidelity mutual fund, when you buy a retirement target dated fund, it all has these things in it. S&P 500, Russell 2000, NASDAQ, bonds, the whole thing. They've all been, you can buy small enough parts like on Robinhood, right? You can buy very, very small parts of an asset. Same thing with Bitcoin. So it almost doesn't matter that Bitcoin has 1.5 million tokens left. It doesn't matter how many billions of dollars will go into Bitcoin. The price will rise equivalently, because just like it's risen in the S&P 500, right? You take the 27 million open interest contracts at the Merck, multiply it by, you know, 46.83, which was the price, then multiply that again by 50. You get like a $600 billion open interest notional value at the mercantile for the S&P 500. That's an incredibly huge number, right? But it's all okay. Like we're all comfortable with it. We don't even think about it. And Bitcoin will probably do the same thing. We'll have this massive adoption, billions and billions and billions of dollars of Bitcoin in retirement accounts, 401ks, insurance companies. Everyone's going to own it. Custody is going to be a normal thing. And it's just going to be like another blip, like another asset, like gold and silver and stocks.
And
that's how it's going to be.
And that's why we were talking about how, when we look at this, how we may have undershot in our prediction by a lot. Though, you know, I think from like 17,000 to a million, I mean, we're giving you at least a fair amount of room to make some cash along the side. But that's an excellent point.
Well, remember, Bitcoin went from, you know, in March of 2020, Bitcoin was 8,300. By April of 2021, a little bit more than a year later, it was 67,000. So it had gone up, you know, eightfold in 1.25 years. When Bitcoin went from $700 to 8,000 from 2017 to 2018. So this is not like it hasn't happened before. You know, every couple of years, Bitcoin just goes up like a rocket, just like it did in 2013. It went from $12 a token to $700 a token, and 1 year later. So it's not hard to envision, for me anyhow, that in 1 year, Bitcoin could be 600,000, and it would not be out of the realm of historical, you know, documentation. So
it would be in line with what we've seen wave after wave after wave.
Yes. And remember, all the Bitcoin rallies from 2009, 2010, when it first was introduced, until now, we're all done by degenerates like you and I and other
yes.
people, right?
I'm glad you use that term, because, you know, hey, it's good to be a degen, especially when you've been in crypto all along.
Skateboarding, espresso drinking degens who have flipped this stuff is what caused this massive rally from $1 a token to like 67,000. Imagine when it reaches Main Street, when you have insurance companies, hedge funds, you know, Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab. I mean, like,
when everybody. You have the teachers' pension fund investing in it. I mean, and that's the exciting thing is, yep. Even though for a lot of us, including a lot of the Gains listeners right now listening to this, you know, it seems like, oh, gosh, we've been in this. Is it kind of late? You got to remember, it is. We're all early adopters when you talk about the general public investing in Bitcoin and Ethereum and crypto at large.
Same thing with the internet. Andy, I published my first website in 1994 or 1995 using this really low-end free software called Hot Dog. And I would upload it to, you know, an internet service company, and I was, you know, publishing things. And I said, wow, the internet's really interesting. It's kind of fun uploading. And, you know, I see people hitting my website, and it's kind of cool. But honestly, the way the graphics looked, it was just basically text message, you know, text on like this background that was very, you know, first rate and nothing fancy to look at. And we had to dial up using a modem in order to connect to the internet. And I remember, you know, my first book on, and I was a book collector back at the time. I bought my first couple of books on Amazon, and it was cool. It was interesting, but it, you know, you couldn't do anything on the internet except maybe buy dog food and a couple of books. And then there was eBay, and you know, that was kind of interesting. But let me just look at what the internet has evolved. Look at how everything is revolutionized just in 25 years, in 28 years. You know, we're performing medical procedures using robotic machines and the internet, like, and telemedicine and like GPS systems, autonomous cars. Just think where we've come in 20 some years, Andy. Imagine what the financial system is going to look like in 20 more.
Yeah,
when money flows, the velocity of money is just grows exponentially around the globe. And even JP Morgan now has a network, a cryptocurrency network that uses collateral. It's a collateral network. Imagine the Fortune 500 companies and the S&P 500 are swapping around collateral like 6 million times a second, right? Rather than a few thousand times per month. I mean, it's mind-boggling what you think of comparing Bitcoin and crypto and distributed ledger systems with where we've gone in the internet since, say, 1994, 1998. I mean,
it just blows you away. You're speaking about the adoption. And again, look at how some of these other areas have grown where there's just wide, widespread adoption. The same thing's coming with crypto. And then my final point in our conversation today is once people become aware of this, wait until that FOMO kicks in, because we've always seen FOMO at the end of a lot of these cycles, and then we see the spike and crash. And the thing is, if you've been in this early on, it gives you an opportunity when the FOMO kicks in to cash out and make some big profits to throw in dry powder and then you can come back in and buy the dips. But let's talk about once that FOMO kicks in and the opportunity then.
Well, boy, Andy, that's a great question. And of course, it's one of the hardest propositions, I think, for everyone, including myself, is that it's easy to buy on the way down because I have confidence in the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ. I have confidence in Bitcoin and Ethereum. And even though I have more than my fair share of altcoins go to zero, the truth is I believe in it as a technology. The technology of cryptocurrency, a blockchain, this is a thing, and it's being adopted around the world. And so that gives me confidence, just like it gives me confidence, again, in the S&P 500. But selling is a way tougher thing to do, selling into the FOMO than it is buying. But I will say this, every cycle that happens, I feel like I get a better idea of when I have to let a few chips off the table. And as an investment advisor, we have the four main parts of an economic cycle. We have the expansion, the peak, the contraction, and then the troughing of the market. Four parts. So basically, when money's loose, when there's peak FOMO in the market, when the money supply begins to contract or you see supply coming out on the market, typically the Federal Reserve, don't fight the Fed. We've all heard that. And then the sideways action, the troughing that happens, where we're kind of working out all our problems. Well, we saw the rally in the market in, you know, from 2019 to 2020, you know, during COVID. First, we saw the decline of COVID, but man, that stock market rally and commodity market rally during COVID was unprecedented.
Well, yeah.
Unprecedented.
And quick off the bottom there at that point.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Amazing.
For sure. And then we saw peak prices in commodities, low price, you know, the high prices in bonds and, you know, generational lows in fixed income, you know, in late 2021, early 2022. And then, of course, the rug pull where everything went down. And I don't have to show you how much, you know, Facebook was down, Amazon, Tesla, I mean, all these things, technology just got crushed, along with fixed income. And so that was the Federal Reserve raising interest rates from 0 to 5.25%. Well, now the rumor is, and heard on the street, is that they're going to begin reducing interest rates by 50 basis points in 2024. I don't think they're going to do it. I think they're going to hold things right about here. But once again, we're going to see some troughing here. And so we are in the troughing part of the economy, I believe, you know, in what I manage assets for. And I think it's also the troughing part of Bitcoin. And when this thing goes off to the races, Bitcoin is risk on. The NASDAQ 100 is risk on. S&P 500, risk on. Cash is risk off. And right now we're not seeing it. We're seeing the decline in the U.S. dollar. We're seeing a rally in stocks and bonds. And we're seeing potentially, you know, money coming, liquidity coming back into the market. So I'm very, very optimistic in this asset class. And again, for my own clients, we do 3 or 4% of in our IRAs and 401ks and people I manage assets for. Only because it is, if it goes to zero, I can't, if we're wrong and Bitcoin goes to zero, which I don't think we are, but if we are, then it can't derail a retirement plan. It's just imprudent to do that. So
it's a little different. Yeah. And I appreciate you do that. And especially since you manage other people's money. I mean, I'm just, you know, host of the Gains podcast. So, you know, as I always say, you know, take my word for a grain of salt. But a degen like you and I guarantee you got more than a little bit more than 2-3% of the portfolio in crypto right now.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie.
That's my guy. I mean, that's all right. That's all right. And so the whole point here is our $1 million Bitcoin forecast is fully intact. If you've been with us, you know, and started doing some of the things we talked about a year ago on December 7th, 2022. And you've been dollar cost averaging in, and when we called the bottom, things are looking pretty good, and that forecast is intact. Now, as we wrap up the Gains podcast, Bill, covered a lot of ground today. Final thoughts.
Boy, Andy, there's, you know, because I'm, they call OG, right? Old gangster. Like, I look back in the early 1980s, I started as a runner at the Board of Trade in 1980. Started at the Chicago Board Options Exchange in 81. And the S&P 500 futures contract had pretty much just been listed and created at the Mercantile. We came out of when we came off the gold standard, the Mercantile was like the place to go to for currencies because we were off the gold standard and they were trading, you know, Japanese yen, the euro, not the euro, maybe the euro dollar, possibly if it was around then, British pound. You know, that was a big deal, this currency world. But we lose track of how big it was as time goes on. Who would have ever thought that the S&P, whose opening print at the Merck was 100, that it would be 4,683 now? That one contract that was worth a few hundred dollars is now worth $960,000. Same thing with Bitcoin. We think back and we say, we missed it. Bitcoin was a few hundred dollars or a few thousand per token. Now it's 41,000. I've already missed the boat. No, I don't think we have, because in 20 years, we're going to be saying, hey, Bitcoin's at 2 million per token or whatever that number could be. It could be more than that. It could be 10 million. Like, how do you even put a target on this limited digital supply? What would be the S&P 500 if they never did a split? If no company in the Dow Jones Industrial or S&P 500 ever did a split, where would the prices of those shares be? I mean, it's astronomical to think of what that notional value, not the notional value, but with the prices per target. So,
and that goes back to, you know, there's a fixed amount here, unlike a lot of the other things we trade.
Absolutely. And I think that's what's most important value proposition is the fact that there's only limited supply and about 1.5 million tokens left for 7 billion people on the planet for the next 100 years. I'm not sure what Bitcoin's going to look like, but I know that you can buy fractional units. You can buy $10 of Bitcoin, $1 of Bitcoin, a penny worth of Bitcoin. And if you think that robots and AI is a thing, they're going to be transmitting value using blockchain technology. When you pay a toll, when you buy your upgrades on a Tesla or a BMW or an electric EV car, like all this stuff is flowing through a cryptocurrency. It's not going to be gold bars. You're not going to be writing a check. You're not going to be doing an ACH from your bank because it takes like 3 days. No, it's going to be instantaneous, near instantaneous payments using blockchain. And of course, the granddaddy of them all is Bitcoin. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Big thanks to Bill Ulivieri, owner of Senecal Capital Management in Glenview. Check out the website, senecalcapital.com. That's C-E-N-A-C-L-E, capital.com. And just throw that title, that book title, real quick, Bill.
It's the Essential Estate Professionals Toolkit for Recovering Cryptocurrency. I know it's a long title.
But if you're OG in this and you have a wallet, you know, you definitely want to check it out. All right. Hey, great to have you, Bill. I appreciate it. We went a little long on this one, but it's Bitcoin. It's so juicy that we had to cover it all. So we'll have you on again soon, as our forecast remains intact and Bitcoin moves higher. All right. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We are back next Wednesday morning, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast powered by Odyssey.